ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, welcome to PM. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, the Prime Minister begins his visit to Papua New Guinea. He'll walk the Kokoda Track to mark Anzac Day, but he's also got his eye on the big strategic picture. Also, is it okay to kick a mother and her baby out of a comedy show? Tricky questions are being asked after an incident in Melbourne. And how did a cartoon about an energetic Brisbane dog called Bluey become a huge international success?
How popular it is, even though it's from the other side of the world. I like the messages for the younger kids, and I like how exciting it is.
First this evening, the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has arrived in Papua New Guinea for a visit that comes just after the departure of China's Foreign Minister, Wang Yi. That visit was seen as having enormous strategic importance for China. Now Mr. Albanese is there to strengthen our nation's relationship with PNG and further the government's strategic goals in the Pacific region. Tim Swanston is the ABC's PNG correspondent. Tim, what's Mr. Albanese going to be doing on this trip?
It's going to be an extraordinary busy schedule over the next few days. This evening, Mr. Albanese is attending a state dinner that'll be hosted by PNG's Prime Minister James Marape and attended by more than 100 people or so here at Parliament House in Port Moresby. Now, at that dinner, it's expected, he'll be, of course, speaking about the shared history and friendship between the two nations. Of course, the big ticket item starts from tomorrow morning when Prime Minister Albanese will head out to the Kokoda Track, and he, along with Prime Minister James Marape, will be walking quite a large section of the track for about 2 days before they mark Anzac Day on Thursday morning with the dawn service at Isarawa. It's going to be an extraordinarily symbolic trip. I mean, this is, of course, FaceTime between both of the prime ministers on the Kokoda Track, reflecting on the shared history where Australian and Papuan soldiers fought against the Japanese in World War II. So no doubt that it'll be a very busy program for Prime Minister Albanese ahead, but one that will certainly reflect and bring into sharp focus the shared relationship between the two countries.
Yes, and all the help PNG locals gave to Australian soldiers during the Second World War. Tim, this all takes place just after China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi has been in Papua New Guinea. What did the two countries agree to?
Well, they did walk away with several agreements, but most in Canberra will be looking at, well, what wasn't signed. So we did see Foreign Minister Wang Yi fly into Port Moresby on Saturday. He held a bilateral with his counterpart, PNG Foreign Minister Justin Tuchenko. Several agreements were signed, notably related to export and trade, as well as an agreement on information communication technology cooperation as well, that we still don't know a great deal about at this stage. This really reflects PNG's relationship as it sees it with China. It's been quite explicit that it isn't looking to secure any sort of security or policing partnership with China, as we've seen Beijing pursuing with other Pacific Island countries, most notably neighbouring here Solomon Islands. And instead, it's a relationship that's most clearly about trade and the economy. But certainly, after there were suggestions at the start of the year about security and policing between the two nations, suggestions that Foreign Minister Justin Tuchenko from PNG had to deny, we know, and certainly went to lengths to assure Australian officials that there wasn't a security and policing deal. We know people in Canberra will be very, very pleased to see that agreements that were signed at the weekend had nothing to do with security or policing.
So what will Anthony Albanese be aiming to achieve on this visit?
Certainly two goals. Of course, the first key goal and the most stated aim here is to reflect on the Kokoda Track, a place of enormous significance for Australia's military history, and to be able to spend Thursday morning at the dawn service there at Isarava. It is a spectacular spot that people on the Kokoda Track always say is a highlight of their walk, and to spend the dawn service there will certainly be a very appropriate and significant place to commemorate the sacrifice of Australian and Papuan soldiers. But of course, there will be a second aim, and that is deepening Australia and PNG's relationship. We've seen quite a lot of significant interaction between both Mr. Albanese as well as Mr. Marape in the last even 6 months alone, including Mr. Marape speaking in PNG's parliament, and Mr. Marape speaking in Australia's parliament, and Mr. Albanese speaking in PNG's parliament early last year. We've seen considerable interaction between the two men, and for them to be walking together on the track for 2 days will really deepen the relationship and strengthen their personal relationship, of which Mr. Marape describes them as already being good friends. So two very key aims that will likely be met in the coming days.
The ABC's PNG correspondent Tim Swanston. The refusal of social media platform X to remove graphic content after the deadly Sydney stabbing attacks has outraged Australian politicians, and their anger could help speed the passing of the federal government's stalled misinformation laws. But cybersecurity experts say it might also be time to start asking ourselves if it's time to switch off social media platforms that aren't complying with Australian standards. Stephanie Smale reports.
Elon Musk, the owner of social media platform X, says he won't take down content, regardless of whether it's considered to be causing harm or spreading misinformation. It's a position that's making a lot of people angry.
Social media has a social responsibility.
X and Facebook owner Meta have been ordered by Australia's eSafety Commissioner to remove violent material or potentially face fines. Meta did as it was told eventually, but X still hasn't. The Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says it's time to crack down on social media misinformation and harm. He says he'll work to get his government's laws designed to do just that happening.
We'll examine whatever's necessary, but we think we've had this out there now for a year. Now, surely there is now a recognition that misinformation is a problem on social media.
The federal government wants to toughen up the Australian Communications and Media Authority, giving it more power to ensure social media platforms are more transparent and holding them to industry standards. Concerns about censorship put the changes on hold, but the coalition has now flagged it's open to changes as long as they don't restrict free speech. The Prime Minister says it's time for change.
I find it extraordinary that X chose not to comply and are trying to argue their case. We know, I think overwhelmingly, Australians want misinformation and disinformation to stop. This isn't about freedom of expression. This is about the dangerous implications that can occur when things that are simply not true, that everyone knows is not true, are replicated and weaponised in order to cause division.
X has labelled the order to remove the content as global censorship, declaring it would challenge the orders in court. The federal government says it will fight any court action. But there's not a lot Australian authorities can do if social media platforms continue to defy such requests. Dr. David Tuffley is a senior lecturer in cybersecurity and applied ethics at Griffith University.
The range of penalties probably need to be reviewed to make them more binding or more likely to be complied with. So I think that's about as much as we're able to do.
Dr. Tuffley points out it would be easy for the social media platforms to filter offensive content.
If these platforms decided to, they could tweak their content algorithms to filter out whatever they decide they're going to filter out. But their business model is founded upon, you know, eyeballs on screens, and they're not inclined to filter out content unless it is, you know, beyond the pale.
But he also argues there's room for a discussion about personal responsibility and the power Australians have to stop using social media platforms if they're doing the wrong thing.
I am actually pretty strong on this whole point of people, individuals, being more aware and better educated about the dangers that are online so that they're not taken unawares. That would actually go a long way, I think, to help the situation.
But do you mean people coming currently off the platforms, you'd encourage people not to use them?
Well, yes. I mean, I think if they're finding that they're being exposed to too much objectionable content, particularly if they have kids and those kids have that program on their phones, then it is in their power to not use it.
Dr. David Tuffley from Griffith University, Stephanie Smale reporting. The Victorian woman accused of murdering three of her relatives with a lunch featuring allegedly poisonous mushrooms has appeared in court today by video link. 49-year-old Erin Patterson is charged with several counts of murder and attempted murder. She denies all the allegations against her. The court sat in the regional town of Morwell, east of Melbourne, and the gallery was full of onlookers. Our reporter Sasha Payne is following the case. Sasha, can you remind us what Erin Patterson is accused of?
The charges relate to a lunch at Erin Patterson's home in Leongatha on July 29 last year. There were four guests at that lunch and three of them died around a week later. They were Gail and Dom Patterson, who were her ex-in-laws, and Gail's sister, Heather Wilkinson. Pastor Ian Wilkinson, who was Heather's husband, also fell very ill and spent several weeks in hospital recovering, but did make a full recovery. Now, Erin Patterson was charged in November last year with three counts of murder relating to those deaths. She was also charged with five counts of attempted murder. One of those relates to Pastor Ian Wilkinson falling ill after the lunch, and another one relates to her ex-husband, Simon Patterson, who was invited to the lunch but didn't go. And then there's three other attempted murder charges that also relate to her ex-husband, Simon, on separate occasions in 2021 and 2022.
So what happened at today's hearing?
Well, today's hearing was really a procedural hearing to decide what are the next steps in terms of this case. Magistrate Tim Walsh was at the Latrobe Valley Magistrates Court where today's hearing was held. That's in Morwell, which is a 1.5 to 2 hour drive southeast of Melbourne. So not close to Melbourne. Erin Patterson is in remand in Melbourne, on the outskirts of Melbourne, and she appeared today via video link, as did her lawyers and as did the lawyers for the prosecution. So today's hearing was really about what happens next. And the discussion was around where the next committal mention will be held. Now, the magistrate, Tim Walsh, pointed out that if it is held back at the Latrobe Valley Law Courts, it could be up to a year until that even gets to a committal hearing, which means that by the time it gets just to that point, Erin Patterson will have been in custody for 14 to 15 months. He was concerned that this isn't fair on Erin Patterson to be in custody for that length of time without actually going to trial or progressing the case. But her lawyers have said that they're happy with that, that she understands that, their client, Erin Patterson, that she understands that it will delay the case and that she's happy with that. They have said that as a matter of principle, this case should progress in the regional court in the Latrobe Valley, where many of the witnesses that will be heard are based and where Erin Patterson is also based.
Did Erin Patterson's lawyers explain their client's reason for wanting the hearing to be held in the local community?
They didn't mention much detail specifically about jurors or anything of that sort. However, their argument did seem to centre on this matter of law, that it should be held in the community closest to Erin and where the alleged crimes took place. Now, the magistrate did point out that Morwell, where we were today, where the courts are based, is actually a long way from her home in Leongatha. So it's not, he didn't consider that to be part of the community. But the lawyers' arguments were very much based on this is the community, so this is where the next hearing should be.
And that case is returning to court on May the 7th. Sasha Payne reporting. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. You can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. Ahead, the huge international success of the TV show Bluey, recognised in London. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to oppose any American sanctions on Israeli battalions for alleged human rights violations in the West Bank. American law bans foreign military units from getting US aid or training if they've been accused of human rights abuses. The reports of possible sanctions came as the US Congress approved more military aid for both Israel and Ukraine. Dr. Peter Layton is a military and defence expert at Griffith University's Asia Institute and has worked at the Pentagon in the US. I asked him what the Israeli battalions that may face sanctions are accused of.
So when they were operating in the West Bank, and the West Bank, otherwise known as the Occupied Territories, is under Israeli martial law. So the military are acting as, if you like, a super police force there. And they are alleged to have beaten up, assaulted, perhaps in a minor way tortured, certain Palestinian citizens of the West Bank. So these are violations of their human rights. This Israeli unit was then moved out of the West Bank and moved to northern Israel. It is now down in southern Israel. It is one of those units that often has complaints raised about it. So this unit really stands out.
So these offences, am I right in thinking, mostly occurred before October 7th last year and the war against Hamas?
Yes, it would seem so. But of course, all this has to be viewed in the context that the Americans are extremely worried about various actions which the Israeli settlers on the West Bank are taking against the Palestinians there. So this is sort of all sort of tied up with that.
The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says such sanctions would be, quote, the peak of absurdity. What effect do you think any sanctions would have on the relationship between the United States and Israel at this very crucial time in the Middle East?
From a military viewpoint, they would be very, very small impact. You are talking about a unit of about 500 people. So American military aid could not be spent on that unit, but Israel could certainly finance and that unit by itself. It is really a political statement whereby President Biden is pressuring the Israelis to perhaps improve their human rights standing. Again, we're sort of talking about the fact that Gaza is sort of entering a state of famine, and the Americans are clearly looking for ways whereby they can put pressure on the Netanyahu government to improve matters.
As an experienced military and defence strategist, what are your impressions of the way the IDF conduct their operations in Gaza?
They're certainly having a bad war. The IDF has been fairly liberal in its use of force. You have to bear in mind that this is different to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, where Australia was involved, which were counterinsurgencies against citizens of those countries. And so there was a high stress placed upon no or extremely limited collateral damage. The Israeli Defence Forces are taking a rather different view, and they are much less concerned about collateral damage. And collateral damages is a term that basically means that when you have lots of it, you have more civilians killed. So the IDF is acting within the law, but it is taking certain liberties with it.
And moving away from the conflict in Gaza, the US House of Representatives has also finally approved $100 billion or nearly in aid to Ukraine. How is that money going to be used, and what difference will it make to Ukraine's fight against Russia?
It'll certainly make a very quick psychological difference, because the Ukrainians have felt perhaps a bit left out this year, as the American Congress has taken a fairly anti-Ukraine stance and perhaps arguably a pro-Russian stance at times. This aid will be very valuable in giving them the military supplies and the hardware that they need. They were certainly running out of ammunition for their artillery pieces. This will now mean they have adequate stocks. It also gives them some long-range rockets. So it will not just mean that they can fight on the front line, on that sort of close in battle, that they can do that better and so stop the Russians. And the Russians have been making small advances over the last month, so this will stop that. But those long-range missiles will also mean that the Russians have moved some of their supply bases and their helicopter bases forward closer to the front line so they could be more effective. These long-range missiles will then force the Russians to then move them back. So the Russian forces overall will become much less effective. There was talk about a Russian offensive starting in the spring or the early summer. I think you'll find that that Russian offensive now is stopped.
Dr. Peter Layton from Griffith University. A comedian's demand that a woman and her baby leave his Melbourne comedy show over the weekend has sparked plenty of debate. Aj Barker was performing at the International Comedy Festival when noises made by the baby distracted him. Some people argue babies shouldn't be allowed at live performances, while others say the situation was handled inappropriately and disrespectfully. Alison Shaw reports.
Popular American comedian Aj Barker has been touring Australia for decades. He now calls Melbourne home, and for around 20 shows over the past month, he's taken the stage at the Athenaeum Theatre as part of the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. But a show on Saturday night has caused controversy.
I heard a baby, which is a pretty distinct sound, and I thought, oh, there's a baby here, and I figured out where it was. I said, I'm really sorry, but the baby can't stay.
That's Aj Barker speaking to radio station 3AW.
I made the decision not for myself, for the audience who wanted to see the show uninterrupted, who wanted to see the jokes work as they should. And I don't really think I've done anything wrong. I do think it was a terribly difficult situation. I can understand that it was difficult and embarrassing for her, and I do feel bad about that.
He's defended his actions, saying the show's policy clearly stated that it was for people 15 years and over. Trish, the woman who was asked to leave, didn't want to give her full name, but she also spoke to 3AW and says she felt humiliated.
It was quite intimidating. He was standing right in front of me. She wasn't screaming. She was just being a baby. She gurgled a little bit. She had a bit of a whinge, nothing super loud. And I was actually breastfeeding while he came and stood in front of me. And then he was basically telling me to leave.
Aj Barker says he couldn't see the woman was breastfeeding and that wouldn't have been a factor in his decision. Trish says she was sitting near the end of her row and was prepared to leave if her baby was making too much noise.
I thought I could make a quick exit if the baby got rowdy. But I thought, I've got a plan and a strict plan. I don't want to impact on anyone else and their enjoyment of the show. And I was just trying to get back to, you know, enjoying something that I enjoyed before kids. And when I saw it, I just booked the ticket. I didn't think too much about it. And I just assumed that she wouldn't be too much trouble.
But the whole affair has sparked heated debate. Some are fiercely critical of Aj Barker's actions.
Everybody should be welcome. I think that's an appalling thing to ask somebody to do.
I think they should have been allowed to stay. The baby was hungry.
Depends on how bad the baby was. If it was really loud, I think so. But if it was just a slight thing, no.
Ellen Sandel is the Green State MP for Melbourne.
Mums manage this all the time. Mums are good at this. They know when their babies are getting distracting and they take action. But to be honest, if Aj Barker can't handle a heckle from a baby, maybe he needs to get a bit better at his job.
Amy, an audience member at the show on Saturday night, disagrees. She called into ABC Radio Melbourne to defend the comedian.
So I actually think it was disrespectful that they, you know, took a baby to the show. They were sitting right down the front. So it's going to absolutely affect the rhythm of his performance and everything. And he was very nice about it. He wasn't rude.
Another caller, Jeanette, agrees the baby shouldn't have been taken to the show.
A lot of other people in the audience would have paid to have their children babysat to go to the show. And I think that's very unfair that someone did take a child when it's clearly 15 over.
The audience on the night were also split, with some of the crowd leaving in support of the mother and others applauding the comedian for booting her out. Melbourne comedian Ellen Marney was there and says it was the behaviour of the rest of the audience that left her uncomfortable.
Male voices in the crowd started screaming, "Get the F out! Get the F out!" From where I was sitting, I felt frozen in my seat in that moment. It just felt like It felt like we were back in, like, the old ages, you know what I mean?
Neither the mother who was kicked out nor Arj Barker have mentioned members of the crowd heckling her or swearing at her as she left. But Ellen Marnie says the comedian could have handled the situation with more respect.
It shouldn't be a debate over whether babies should come in or not. It should be a debate over whether men in positions of power should be exerting that power towards a woman in a public space. I don't think women should be, you know, demonized or eradicated from these spaces, you know, just because they don't have the help. I think that's unfair.
PM has approached the venue for comment.
That report from Alison Chow and Alexandra Humphreys. The beloved children's television series Bluey has been given a special award for its cultural impact on the world. Australia House, the home of the Australian High Commission in London, was transformed into Bluey House for the ceremony. The cartoon Blue Heeler is being recognised as a fantastic ambassador for Australia. This report from Rachel Hayter.
It's a familiar melody to parents of small children. The Bluey theme song played here by a marching band outside the Australian High Commission in London, celebrating the cultural impact of a lovable, inexhaustible cartoon Blue Heeler dog.
It was amazing. It was amazing. I like how popular it is, even though it's from the other side of the world. I like the messages for the younger kids, and I like how exciting it is when you watch it.
I love Bluey. I think it's a really good educational program for children. It teaches really good values.
Also among the crowd outside Australia House, today renamed Bluey House, comedian Rob Beckett.
It's amazing what a little blue cartoon dog can do. It's taken the world by storm. And if you asked me 8 years ago, before I had children, if I'd be stood in front of the Australian Embassy talking about a cartoon dog, I'd have said no. But I'm here. And it's happened. So that is a cultural impact.
That impact is what today's celebration is all about. The Australian High Commission in London presented Bluey with a special recognition award for cultural impact across the United Kingdom and the world.
Bluey is far and away the most successful kids show, not just in Australia, but in the United Kingdom, and also through Disney in the United States.
Stephen Smith is the Australian High Commissioner to the United Kingdom.
It's a fantastic cultural ambassador for Australia.
And he says it's impossible to put a figure on the value Bluey will bring to the Australian economy.
How many of those are going to say to themselves, in the future, I wouldn't mind taking advantage of the up to 35 three-year work holiday visa in Australia? You can't calculate the benefit of that.
Ah, I know. Curried sausages.
Curried sausages? Blech. Why do you want curried sausages?
I love curried sausages.
Blech.
Associate Professor Liam Burke is a cinema and screen expert from Swinburne University of Technology. He describes Bluey as an Australian success story like no other.
It began very modestly about 5 years ago in Brisbane with Ludo Studios creating this, what was supposed to be an Australian response to Peppa Pig.
OK, curried sausages.
Evening, ladies. I'm here to pick up me sausages.
Granddad, you don't pick them up. Bingo delivers them to you.
All right.
There are now more than 150 episodes of Bluey. It's one of the most watched children's programs in the world. Nielsen ratings show it was the second most streamed TV show in the United States last year, with a viewership of 43.9 billion minutes, second only to the legal drama Suits. And Liam Burke believes it's Bluey's Australianness that makes her so popular.
We've spoken to 750 parents over the past 3 years as part of our research, and uniformly they say that Bluey is their number one show that they like to watch with their kids, and what they like about it is its unambiguous Australian setting. Kids can see their experiences reflected in the show. A lot of shows on streaming, like Cocomelon, Paw Patrol, lack any regional or cultural specificity. But global audiences seem to be responding enthusiastically to this Australian setting, to Australian humour, Australian locations, and the Australian accents and turns of phrase.
The award for the Blue Four-Legged Australian Cultural Ambassador coincides with the release of a special extra episode called Surprise.
That report from Rachel Hayter and Cayman Gock. Thanks for joining me for PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. If you'd like to listen back to any of our interviews or reports, you'll find them on the PM webpage. And you can catch the program live or later on the ABC Listen app. That's where you'll find ABC News Daily with Sam Hawley each weekday morning. Tomorrow, Sam's taking a look at how people are being trapped into paying more for their electricity thanks to what are called time of use charges. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Good night.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. More Australians are finding themselves in a position where their power bills are rising because they've been unwittingly subjected to time of use tariffs. Today, energy reporter Dan Mercer explains the tariffs and how they're leading to a greater energy divide. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.